Infernomatic Productions.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
metalmayhemroc.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno, and direct from New Jersey, Metal Walt.
Good evening, everybody. Happy, heavy holidays to all. As always, Thursday nights, new content drops. I'm going to be joined by my co-host, Metal Walt, in just a second, as we welcome rock photographer Frank White and veteran New Jersey metaler Alan Tecchio onto the show. Now, these two metalheads put together a kick-ass book. It's called New Jersey, A History of the Garden State Metal Scene. This is volume one of a three-part series. This book concentrates on 1969 through 1986. Just want to remind you to get up to our website, sign up for our newsletter, check out some past shows, rate and review. If we read your review on the air, we'll send you a tour shirt. Last week, we had Chris Impalatari talking about his now Metal Hall of Fame career. 2 weeks ago, we had Sword. Canadian Outfit just released a new album, so they talk about it. And our continuing series, History of Metal, that myself, Metal Walton, Ian O'Rourke navigate. That's all up there on the website. So let me get my brother in metal from the Garden State himself up on the line. Metal Walt, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's all good up here. We had a really, really good discussion with legendary Tri-State area photographer Frank White and veteran New Jersey heavy metal singer Alan Tecchio of the band Hades and Nonfiction back in the 80s and 90s. And they joined us tonight to talk about their new book. John, what was your impressions of their stories about the metal scene and how they put the whole book together?
I thought it was very entertaining. And the fact that we're separated by 6 hours and 200 miles, it was like I was there as well. Hearing the stories of the venues and the landscape of how they discovered these bands and followed these bands. And Walt, your interaction as a native New Jerseyan, just the way you guys shared, one, the pride of your home state, and two, how both, all three of you were there when this was happening. I'm not going to tease a lot of it. All I have to say is one of the best little anecdotes of this interview and this story was the fact that, when he tells the story about how he shot Led Zeppelin in New York City, that alone is worth price of admission.
I think these guys, number one, I mean, there's a billion books out there about metal, but this book was put together from their hearts were into this. I mean, these are guys that are fans of the music. They're dedicated lifelong metalheads. Yes, they work in the industry, but when you see the final product, you could tell they put 150% effort into this thing. And the idea behind the book is not just to tell the cliche stories about the big bands, but it's to talk about the venues, the fans, the scene, how the scene grew in New Jersey in the 70s and how, you know, merchandising through flea markets and small market stores and sitting in line at different venues overnight to get tickets. And then the stories about the bands and themselves, not just the big artists, but the local bands that cut their teeth. Some of them made it big, others didn't, but they have a place in New Jersey history. So it really does paint the whole landscape of the metal scene. And to be honest, they had so much passion for this that they said they could not fit it all in one book. So they decided to cut it off. And they're going to come back in maybe another year or so with a second and third edition. I mean, hell, guys, the first book, it's 350 pages, and it covers basically the first 8 or 9 years of the metal scene. That should tell you what it is, and it's definitely a must-have. Got to have it.
I agree. That's the bottom line. Got to have it. So let's get into this. Have a happy, happy holiday season. We will be back next week in a new episode. For Metal Walt, I'm the Vernomatic. This is Metal Mayhem ROC. So let's get this going. Continuing in our series of behind the scenes of metal, we have Frank White and Alan Tecchio of New Jersey, their new book, Jersey Metal, A History of the Garden State's Metal Scene, Volume 1, 1969 through 86. Hey, guys, welcome to Metal Mayhem ROC.
We're honored. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, let me quickly introduce you to my brother in metal. Goes by the name of Metal Walt, a resident of the Garden State.
What's hey, up, Walt? What's
going on? Hey, Alan, Frank, what's up? Good to see you guys again.
Thanks.
You know?
Likewise, bro.
I feel like we're long lost friends as it is. You know, how many shows, Frank, and you and I have been at? I feel like I should know you like my brother because we're at the same shows all the time. And, you know, Alan, we had a nice chat at Dingbats only a few weeks ago at that Raven show. So got
it
to connect.
So, much fun. So
it was
fun.
A great, great night. So really, really happy that you guys have joined on this. And I'd first like to kick it off and congratulate you both on a really, really unique and extremely, extremely detailed book looking into the history of metal in the state of New Jersey. I mean, this thing, it's almost 350 pages. It weighs about 10 pounds. Just really, really, really good.
Heavy.
Exactly. It's heavy, right?
As it should be.
Tell us a little about, you know, yourselves. Frank, you're the archivist, right? You're the photographer. And Alan, you're the musician. So what are your backstories? How long have you guys been in the industry? How do you know each other? How'd you connect for the book?
Well, I started photographing at 12 years old. My first band, after I was with my mother photographing for a few years, was Led Zeppelin at Madison Square Garden. And I had to take her camera without her knowing about it. I had to tell my parents a lie and told them I was down the street where I was actually at a concert in New York City. You know, I had to take a bus and walking through snow to get down to the garden, take pictures and buying a ticket. You know, it was like a whole new experience for me. And it was experience in itself, just seeing the show. It was when you walked in, it smelled like marijuana, you know, all over the place. You know, everyone was all excited. And, you know, I had a great experience for my first show ever. I mean, I was like Led Zeppelin. I mean, my God, I was a fan of those guys for like 6 years before I went and saw them live. So I just, you know, made sure that I was taking some really nice photos because I didn't know if it was going to be my only show, if my parents ever caught me. And luckily, they never did. And I was able to keep going with it for a long time. So that's how I started. And I just went to show after show, like every few weeks, you know, I would go to another show and went through the same routine with my parents. And before you knew it, I had 2.5 years of photos under my belt already. By the time I was like almost 15 years old. And that's when I asked my father for a camera and he bought me one. And I started taking pictures with that camera. And then that went on for a few years and I was able to get some really close seats because I met a ticket broker in the store I was working with called Collector's World in Bergenfield. And I ended up selling tickets for the guy. I was just like Mike Damone from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I was selling my tickets at my high school, the mall, my friends, you know, anybody who wanted them. I took the best seats that I could get my hands on. And, you know, it's what's what you see in the book.
In terms of meeting me, I was in a band called Prophecy, and Frank actually did his first photo shoot where he posed a band with us.
Yeah.
And that was like 84, something like that, 83, 84.
Yeah, and, you know, all up to that moment, I was just shooting live concerts. I'm, you know, before I met Alan, the biggest band, I met AC/DC in a hotel in New York City, and I was with them, like, just hang out in the lobby with those guys. And it was a great experience with me and my friend Richie, who were in the book. And we were with them for about, I would say about an hour or so. And we had a great time. I was like, you know, just got some amazing photos of them just hanging out. And then maybe within a year, I would say like a couple of years later was when we kind of met and I did my first photo session with his band Prophecy.
I got to ask, Zeppelin, what year was this?
75.
75, so Presence tour, that era. And AC/DC, what year were you hanging out with them? Was it with Bon Scott?
That was after it was after Brian Johnson. Scott. It was Brian Johnson, a year after he was with the band.
Okay, so Zeppelin at MSG. How old were you at the time?
I was 12.
Fucking A, man. 12. And
dude, jumping a bus in a snowstorm, this guy.
My mother didn't like to drive. She would take the bus into the city to see her parents. And so little did she know, she was teaching me how to go into New York City.
Yeah. You
know, never thinking that I would ever take the bus by myself to a show without her or my father knowing about it.
That's great. I have one quick question. I'm going to really let Lance drive this because, you know, he's the Jersey guy. But we had Mark Weiss on the show when his book came out, and the story about him when he was younger, going down to MSG, taking pictures of Kiss. They would be there for a couple nights. He would take the pictures and then the next day sell them outside. And
doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But I was selling them in buttons. What happened was I was working at this place called Collector's World in Bergenfield in New Jersey in 78. And the store owner had a button machine. I was selling photos in the store. And so the guy asked me if I wanted to have a few of my photos into buttons. I was like, yeah, sure. That'd be great. Because at the time, buttons were a big deal.
Yep.
And so I ended up making a few of them and they started to sell. And I'm thinking, well, if I'm going to these shows, maybe I could sell not only tickets, but I could sell buttons outside. So I put them on a piece of cardboard and I would have them so I could fold them up and put them in my jacket in case there was any cops walking by.
Yeah.
And so me and my friend would take each side of the arena and stand outside and sell tickets and sell buttons at the same time.
Lucky Peter Grant didn't find you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I could tear ass and he would be, you know, getting too far behind. Yeah.
So, hey guys, you know, again, we know that the book is New Jersey centric, so to speak. But, you know, in my look at it, any fan of metal or hard rock can easily assimilate to the content. You know, just like if you were to pick up a book about the Sunset Strip out in L.A. or maybe something about Birmingham, England, in the Black Country, you know. So, Alan, I know when we talked recently, you said this was like a real labor of love for you. And that's a nice way to put it. But how did the decision come about to make a book about this?
So it was totally Frank's idea. He came to me after I had edited his Dio book. I read his Dio book and I caught, you know, a bunch of typos and a different kind of like Brit speak kind of tone to it.
It was printed in England. And once I gave them the manuscript back, they changed words on me and then they went right to print with it. So right. I didn't get a chance to check out what else they did to it. And they also switched my cover and title of the book too. When it was already out there with one title, they switched it on me and they never told me about it. So I had to start press all over again and I got Alan involved. And then within a few months later, I asked him to be my co-author.
Wow. And is it true? Because I've read up in the liner notes that this is just the first volume that you guys plan on putting out eventually, like a second and maybe even a third volume.
At first, we wanted to do 69 in 2021. But then as time went on, it was becoming quite clear that it would have been over 1,000 pages and logistically wouldn't be able to sell great and wouldn't be able, you know, it'd be too much to ship. So we decided to break it up into two volumes. And then when we realized that it would still have been too many pages, we made it into three volumes. So the second volume is 1987 to 2004, which we're starting to work on. And then when that book is done, then it'll be 2005 to 2021.
That's amazing. I mean, that's going to be what a collection that'll eventually be coming.
Sure.
You know, I would say I'm excited for the volume one, but it almost leaves you hanging at the end of 86 when you,
right.
you close that last page and you see Joel and Turner and then you two guys in there and you're like, all right, right. you know, leave me hanging for another year before this comes out.
We,
you know,
we can tell you that in 1987, the first stuff that you'll see will be when Raven played at the Capitol Theater in Passaic with Wasp and Slayer.
The first book sets the stage. The next book is going to take it to another level.
Right.
It sounds amazing. So you look at the cover. Mm-hmm. It's a crowd. I mean, for me being the local guy, it's apparent this is the old Giant Stadium.
Right.
What show was that taken at? Do you remember
specifically?
It was taken
at Monsters of Rock.
1988?
Right. But what happened was at the time when we started the book, it was like we wanted that as the cover photo because it just kind of said metal right there, you know. And we thought it was going to be the cover for the entire decades we were doing the book. But then when it came closer and closer to finding the cover just to up to 86, we just thought that that would still be the really best cover for us at that point. So we decided to keep that.
Now, was that show number one or show number two? And I bring that up because I went to the second show, which I believe was a Saturday. And I only remember that because I graduated high school on the Friday. So I was at my high school graduation in Kearney, and Saturday was like, you know, pile into the old Buick Skylark and go down there with your buddy and a case of beer and get whacked, you know?
Kearney, yeah. Love it.
I would guess it would be Friday, because normally when photographers went to some of these shows, usually it's the first day.
Frank, hey, in a general question, just coming off the top of my head, how many shows do you think you've attended and shot photos at? Is that like, do you have a record 100, of that?
100.
100. 100.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I never counted the amount of shows I've done over the years, but I would say each month I would have done at least maybe like a dozen or more, you know, split them up a few per week. And then I would do like photo sessions with bands, you know, through, and I still do. But I don't do as many live shows. You know, I'll do maybe like a couple a month. Sometimes none. Like the month of December, I don't think I'll be photographing any shows. I might maybe go to one or two of them, but for the most part, it'll be just, you know, to hang and, you know, and just kind of work on, you know, book number two and other things I got going on in my life.
You mentioned Dio. Were you involved with this new Dio documentary?
No, just the book with the company.
And that Wasp Slayer Raven tour inside the Electric Circus. I had a chance to see that up in Toronto. I was living in Toronto at the time.
Probably right around the time I saw him at the Capitol in Passaic.
January 87, I think.
Right.
All right, good shit, man. Good shit.
So, hey, guys, you know this because you've been around it a little bit more than me. And, hey, I'm only the fan guy, right? I just go to the shows and we're all at it together. But, you know, the New Jersey metal scene and even New York to a degree, it's kind of it's a small world in many ways, right? You go to the shows, you don't know half the people there, but you look at the people in the crowd and you're like, man, I've been to at least 50, 60, 70 shows for the last 30 years with that guy. I never talked to him or anything. And I can tell you, you know, through the music, we know it's not just a hobby, it's a lifestyle, and I've made so many acquaintances and friends through it. I think we've crossed paths with certain guys that you know as well. I'm really good friends with Brian Rademacher, who you know, Frank. Yep. I'm good friends with Brian.
He's in our book. He photographed the Thor photos back in 1980 at the Showplace in Dover.
Nice.
See that? Yep.
Great guy. He's interviewed me for his Rock Eyes show. And, you know, I've known him since around probably like late 70s, you know, early 80s time period. You know, we'd run into each other at shows and I would talk to him about his photography and all. And he seemed to, you know, really like the things I was telling him. And we became friends ever since.
Yeah, we cross paths with a Kearney connection. And another name that you probably know, too, and I think he's mentioned it in the book, was the late, great Herb Newman, Magic Man.
Yes.
So right. Very, very good friends with Herb and up until his passing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a real character in and of itself. But the point of all of this is, you look out at your credits that you give in the book for you guys. It's enormous. Like, how do you assemble a cast of characters, guys to help out with the stories, bring the light, you know, bring the light together, bring the bands in that. I mean, Alan, is that your skill set there where you kind of did the narrative while Frank did the photographs?
No, I think, well, I mean, there is something to be said for that, but I think Frank was the glue for a lot of those connections.
Yeah, over the years, being a photographer and, you know, being in the business, you just get to, you know people, and people give you business cards or, you know, you just find out things online, how to get in touch with some of them. And we just took it day by day. You know, we tried to compile as much as we could, and they're all little pieces to a puzzle. And we just had to, you know, put them in the right places, and then it fit well. And then we just kept going from there.
I think it's an amazing testament to you guys. And I was going to remark on that a little bit later, but the overall content, it really contains, you know, all the big bands that everybody knows and loves, but you really get deep into, you know, the bands that cut their teeth in New Jersey that are maybe bigger names, but they got their start in the scene. And then, you know, the local acts that are maybe, you know, here and gone already, but they have a place in everybody's heart in New Jersey folklore. So, you know, I always think, like, when you think metal or hard rock, you know, the average fan around the world is going to think for Jersey, they think Bon Jovi, they think Skid Row. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously much deeper roots in the metal scene from New Jersey. And I think your preface really, really calls it out, where J.J. French of Twisted Sister writes that out. And he really calls out that that scene really boomed in the early to mid 70s, mainly after they dropped the drinking age back, I think, to 18. Right. And then that was also the emergence of, like, you know, arena rock and hard rock. And that became like the forefront of what was on radio stations like WPLJ and whatever. And also they restricted, apparently, like, there were sound restrictions that were removed. So, you know, tell us about those formative years and, you know, what, you know, Twisted Sister means to you guys in terms of contributing to this book and your friendship.
Well, I met JJ in 1980. At this Long Island music festival, and that's when I met Richie Rano for the first time, and he ended up being my neighbor, lived a few blocks away. And when I first heard of Twisted Sister, like in the late 70s, I was just blown away by their music, and I just said I had to meet these guys, and then I had to start photographing them. They just seemed like the perfect band to come into my life at that time. And
the Dunkin' Donuts story is amazing.
And yes, and when I was working at Dunkin' Donuts after a show at the Circus in Bergenfield, they happened to come by at 3 o'clock in the morning after I went home, changed my clothes, and went up the street because I lived up the street from Dunkin' Donuts. And they happened to walk in within like a half hour after I was started working. And I was like, I was telling them, like, wow, I just saw you guys up the street, and here you are now without your makeup on, regular clothes and stuff. It was just weird for me to see a band, you know, come into my workspace. But, you know, hey, you know, they have a long drive home, so they needed coffee and donuts, right?
But they were impressed by his work ethic.
And so I ended up, becoming friends with JJ over the years. And I saw them many times at the clubs in northern New Jersey, you know, maybe like Fountain Casino, you know, sometimes in New York, in the city or Long Island, but a lot of times was like at the Soap Factory in Palisades Park, the Circus in Bergenfield, the Hole in the Wall in Rochelle Park. And I just kept following them, and then they got signed to Atlantic Records, and they went off from there, you know. And I give them a lot of praise because, you know, they stuck to their guns, and, you know, they just a mind-blowing band to see live, especially in a club. So I give them all the praise in the world for what they've done over the years. And I'm friends with JJ to this day, and he was the perfect person to ask to do the preface for our book, because he knew so much about the New Jersey music scene back in the early days of when it started out. And so he's like one of the pioneers of that kind of music, you know?
So, I think we were coming up on the 20th anniversary or anniversary of the New York Steel Show. Were you guys at that one? I was at that one in attendance when they reunited for that gig. Were you guys there?
Yes, I was.
I was not.
Okay.
I was also at this show. I remember it was a show at Don Hills in Lower Manhattan where the band came out without no makeup on. But then the New York Steel Show came, and I think they put some of it back on. It was a great show for a great cause. So it
certainly was. Yeah. Yeah, I think their non-makeup band was called Bent Brother, if my memory serves me right.
Because
they played up at up in Morristown at a little bar called Double D's, I remember, a few years
yeah,
later.
Yeah, I was at that club for a couple.
That was the loudest show I think I've ever been at. I'll never forget that one. My ears were ringing for weeks after that.
and you had the girls right next door.
So, Vern, just to paint a picture, this was a rock club connected to a go-go bar in one building. And when you went in the front door, you paid your admission. The go-go bar was to your right. Club was to the left.
Yep.
And you would see the girls come out, slide down the pole, then the bands around the corner. Yeah, that's not too far away from me. And, I mean, it's long gone, but that was a cool little place for a while.
It was also a place in Secaucus. I think it was called the Blue Room.
Yeah.
that had the same kind of setup.
Rock, yeah, right next to AJ's.
Bar and, you know, wiggling at the other side of the bar.
That's a whole nother topic, but I always say, like, there's certain 80s music, I think Danger Danger and certain other bands, Rat, that to this day, that screams strip club when I first turned 21 and 19, and you know, in whatever, 1991 or whatever. That was like the music they played when you went to happy hour Friday night. You didn't hear this dance crap. You heard Rat. You heard LA Guns, right?
Yeah.
Well, but hey, excuse me quickly, talking about the ballet, if you will. 87, I mentioned that I was living up in Toronto. Well, I was a freshman in college. I was going to school up there for recording arts. And here I was, a 19-year-old American. The American dollar was through the roof. And there I was going to the Brass Rail for lunch 3 days a week.
Because, nice.
Yeah, we all know how the Canadian ballet is second to none. So, you know, triple X Bredors, full nudity and jamming metal. So
Yeah.
You had it going on up there.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Yep. So, hey, Frank, just, you know, I don't want to get off the Twisted Sister topic because there's some amazing photos that you have in the book that date back to, I think, 1973. And to me, you know, I did a double take. I had to look at the guys and I couldn't even make out who some of them were. Were there different guys in Twisted Sister at that time? And then a little bit later, there was a grouping of photos from a venue I never heard of called the Sunshine Inn in Asbury. Some amazing photos of Kiss from 74.
Right.
So how did these photos of both of those bands surface?
Well, okay. So since I've known JJ for so long, I went over to JJ's place in New York City and I spoke with him and he gave me those photos to put in the book. So those are his original. It's the original Twisted Sister lineup that you see there. And the other photos from the Sunshine Inn, we got those from this girl, Cindy Smith. She gave them to me because I happened to contact her through someone else and we were able to meet. And then I went over to her house in New Jersey and I was able to pick out photos right from her photo albums. And all those photo that you see in the book were just sitting there, just waiting to be used. And I was so glad that I found them and we made sure we put them right in.
Yeah, it made
really perfect sense too, because it was at that time period where everyone was starting to wear makeup and Kiss was, you know, trying to lead that pack.
Who were the members of Twisted Sister in those photos? I mean, JJ French was obviously one of them. Was it the other guys in there too? Or were there some different members, if you recall?
Oh, yeah. That's all the original lineup. I mean, D came in 76, and then Mark Mendoza came in from the Dictators. And then the other guys came in, you know, Eddie came in.
That's the Jersey connection, because it was a Jersey band called Silver Star and they were looking for a guitar player. JJ answered their ad. He lived in Manhattan and he joined a band in Hohokus, New Jersey, and then got them to change the name to Twisted Sister. So the original lineup is the guys you're talking about who were originally Silver Star. And then over time, it became much more of a Long Island band.
Wow, that's information I wasn't aware of. Thank you, Alan. It's a good back history there.
Yeah, it's also in the book, too.
Hey, Frank, you know, you started off by talking about how you took your first shots when you were 12 and around at the Led Zeppelin, the Garden show. But in the book, there's a long period where you really showcase like a lot of those shows, you know, Beacon Theater, Capitol Theater, the Garden, Nassau Coliseum. I mean, you go through it. It's amazing. You got Zeppelin, Bad Company, Rainbow, Queen, right. Alice Cooper, Ted Nugent, AC/DC. I mean, and that's just the 70s. And then you get up into the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Judas Priest and Maiden and Van Halen, Ozzy's debut as a solo artist, you know, Black Sabbath changes with Ronnie James Dio and then Ian Gillan coming in under Born Again. So for both of you guys, like just in general, maybe outside the book, what was your takeaway from that period of metal?
My time photographing music started out in New York City because when I was a child, you know, going into teenage years, I didn't have anybody to take me. So I would do all my photographing in New York City because there was no arena here in New Jersey for anybody to go to. So the closest one would be Madison Square Garden. And then you got the Academy of Music, which turned into the Palladium, and you had other places to go to too. Now, if I was a little older at the time, you know, I could have maybe taken my car to the Capitol Theater or to Convention Hall. So I had to settle on going into New York City until I found rides that would take me to other places. So my friend Carlos is in the book, and he was the one who had a van, and he worked with me at Dunkin' Donuts, and he drove me to these shows. And so I got to appreciate other venues and other forms of music because he had a vehicle that would be spacious enough for us to enjoy while we went to a show. And, you know, it got me into photographing more different types of music. And then I got my own car, and I got into other types of music as well while, you know, I was photographing heavy metal. And so I got to appreciate all different types of music through the early part of my life. And, but heavy metal just ended up selling more than a lot of other music for me. And so I concentrated on that a little bit more. But then, you know, other genres came in and I would photograph them at times. And then, you know, just went back to what sold the most, which was heavy metal music. And so I got to really sink in real deep into my life with that kind of music. And so I appreciate it to this day. And so I try to give back now by doing these kind of books to show not only New Jersey, but the rest of the United States and the rest of the world what it was like living here in New Jersey during that time period and enjoying the heavy metal music of our state.
Now, yeah. I was probably too young to have gone to Rock and Roll Heaven on Route 18 in East Brunswick. You make sure that is well featured in the book.
Right.
I mean, that was a big flea market.
It was Clark, the Rock and Roll Heaven in Clark a few years later.
Okay. So I don't know about that. To tell us about that, was like that the place to go for metal fans to hang out and congregate?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the back then, at first, the flea market, you know, Rock and Roll Heaven was in a flea market that was like in a giant, like, let's say one big store that they made into like they sectioned it off. And John and Marsha got their little piece of the area inside the store, and they set up shop, and it became an instant hit with a lot of fans of heavy metal music. And then I guess over time they decided they wanted to get their own store, and so they moved over to Clark, which is not too far from East Brunswick. And they decided to you know, set up shop there for a few years. And I, you know, when I went there, I always saw, you know, some people hanging out, buying records and all. It was always busy. And they had, you know, bands come down and hang out. And a good meeting place to, you know, listen to music, buy music, and have a good time.
John, you recently hosted Raven up in Rochester an Metal Mayhem ROC supported show, and you're pretty good friends with the Gallagher brothers, who also supported Metallica at that big John and Marsha tribute show in Florida. John, tell us a little bit about that, or any questions for Frank and Alan on the Metallica years, Old Bridge Metal Militia, and that period of time down there in Jersey.
Just a couple quick questions. Anthrax, when before they really got big, did you shoot any of that? There was that famous, I think it was Anthrax, Anvil, Raven show. And did you shoot any of those early Metallica Jersey shows before they came up to Rochester, ironically enough, to record Kill 'Em All? How involved were you in that Johnny Z metal scene?
The first time I photographed Metallica was at the Paramount Theater in Staten Island on April 8th. 1983. It was the second to last show for Dave Mustaine.
Okay.
And on that same bill was Vandenberg and the Rods. And yeah. Vandenberg was headlining, and Metallica was the opening band. And you know, the show, I just fell in love with the guys. They were so cool, and their music was just so outrageous at the time. After they were over with, I went straight over to their merch table, bought their the Metallica Metal Up Your Ass shirt, which just had just the words. There was no toilet bowl with a Swartzicken out of it. And I ended up meeting James, and I asked him, I go, do you like to be called James or Jimmy? Because, you know, everyone had, like, you know, nicknames back then. So he liked to be called, yeah, I like James. So I'm like, okay, cool. All right, James. And then, you know, I would meet the other guys. And I also photographed Anvil back then. Anthrax I photographed, I think, like, starting in 84, 80, early 85, around then. And some of the Raven photos guys with Anvil in 1982, actually, when they were on tour together. So I started photographing those bands that Johnny was involved with, you know, right around the time that he started, you know, his rock and roll heaven.
Walt mentioned that in October, I hired Raven. They had a tour stop in Rochester. And the ties, the Rochester pipeline to New Jersey and Johnny Z is well documented. Johnny brought the Metallica guys up here. Well, it so happened a couple of weeks ago, I was down in Jersey with visiting Walt, and we were going to the Merciful Fate show. On my way back, I stopped and had lunch with Carl Kennedy because we, developed a friendship. Well, Carl was telling me that exact story about the Vandenberg show. You know, so it's full circle here. He's telling me the story, and when I was talking to Carl, I'm like, oh, I could only imagine. Now here I am speaking to the guy that shot it, and it's it's just it's a nice connection between up here in Rochester, New York, and what was going on in Jersey. And that's why I'm really interested in this. And, you know, we may be separated by 6 hours, but we're all cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
That was a magical time. And
well, I wanted to make it part of the book because it was such a magical time. And, you know, if I didn't, you know, who would? Who would put all that stuff in there? Who would find, you know, all the information? I figured I would. And Alan, with his help, you know, with everything, you know, we really put together one hell of a book. And so we're so glad that we were able to bring it out to the people and really show them what Jersey was all about back then.
Are there any pictures or documentation of the Old Bridge Militia gang?
In the book, sure. There are definitely pages where they're in. We have like photos that was taken by the Slayer's road manager of the band in Metal Joe's basement from the Old Bridge Militia. He rented a home in Farmingdale, New Jersey, and the band came down, came to his house, and they had another photographer, a friend of mine, Kevin Hodapp. He photographed some of the photos in the book. He photographed them with Metal Joe upstairs in one of the rooms, and afterwards he left and didn't stay to photograph the show in the basement. But the road manager was there, and he ended up photographing those photos that you see in the pages. And, you know, that back then, that must have been some hell of a show to be there with just a handful of people downstairs in a crammed in a basement with a bunch of gear
and dirt bikes in the background.
Listeners, this is a perfect illustration of how it was back in the day, because it's been documented up here in Rochester when the Metallica guys stayed, they befriended people up here and stayed at their house.
Yeah, so it was. I was with bands where I was with this band Impaler, and we toured down through the southeast of the U.S., and we stayed at a guy's house in Myrtle Beach. Hung out, we slept on his floor, you know, and then the show was the following day, and he was the promoter of the show. Yeah, and it was... it's just the way it was for certain bands, you know, and other bands obviously had bigger hotel rooms, bigger, you know, tour buses and all, but they had a bus or van or something. And, you know, I just took it. Okay. As normal. And we just had a great time.
Hey guys, in addition to the massive amount of photos that are included in the book, what I think is really neat is the inclusion of the old venue ads, right? Taken out of print and, you know, pasted in there, where you could look back at any venue in any given year and night, and you could see, oh my God, look at all these bands playing either on one night or over a weekend or a period of a month. So Alan, did you get involved with this at all? Were these out of the aquarium or the old East Coast Rockers? Like, did you pick through those archives or something?
That's actually a great question. So it's just literally a day or so ago caused a little bit of a stir for us because they did give us access to their archives completely. However, we never got anything in writing about this, and we spent mad hours, especially Frank.
But, you know, I wanted to get the best images, you know, for our book because it deserved it.
Well, it helped us timeline everything so we can get the dates
that
right.
That too.
And the book is, if you didn't mention it already, written, you know, month by month, year by year. So it tries to be continuous, you know what I mean, and have a continuity to it. However, they saw it that are in the book and they wanted them removed. So we are now right now redoing the book. So the books that we have now, which is, I don't even know, it's crazy. And honestly, it's our own fault for not getting into writing, but they don't want it out there. So we're going to have to reset the book, which is going to make the photos a lot bigger. And Frank's actually doing a great job getting other photos to replace a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. So we're already like a quarter away done with the book already.
But the books that are out there now, they're the last ones anyone will ever be able to get.
So they'll it'll be more special.
For those fans out there that are interested in a book, buy your copy now and get the rare edition with the aquarium and
they are going fast.
Dude, every day I wake up, there's more sales on the website, and it's a beautiful thing.
I go to the post office every day.
Yep. I'm sure.
Oh, and I appreciate the little recycling travel bag that came in the book. So that's an added bonus.
No worries.
Yeah, you know, just trying to help out the planet one book at a time.
Exactly.
So, hey, guys, earlier I mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on the big bands. But what I also really liked is you really give due diligence to some of the lower profile artists. And I called out bands like T.T. Quick, which, of course, had Mark Tornillo of Accept Fame in there now. And you had Prophet, who was a Jersey band. Yep. Even Sabotage, who is a dear, you know, favorite of mine, even though they're from Florida. Overkill is one of my favorites. And even Ray Gillen. I'm a big Black Sabbath 80s geek. And we actually, John and I just did an episode on picking apart the discography of Badlands recently, which will air soon. So tell us about some of the brush-in with your friendships with these artists and how they get involved with the scene.
Well, with Ray Gillen, I saw him probably maybe once with Harlot in the clubs, and then I didn't see him for a couple years, but I had his information. And then he called me one day, and you know, he told me he was going to be in Black Sabbath. So I ended up going to photograph his first show, which was in New Haven, Connecticut, which is in the book. And then I photographed him at his house in New York City, near Central Park. And we've always had a great time together, hanging out. And, you know, we both enjoyed each other's company. And, you know, it's sad that he's gone for so long now. He could have went on and done some great things with his talent. But we had to at least put him in the book because he was in a bunch of Jersey bands. And we just happened to be friends with people that knew him well. And we were able to collect a nice gathering of photographs and to decide which ones were the best ones to put in. And that's what you see now.
One other thing I wanted to just ask, and this is probably not captured in the book, but I could be wrong, just about the ongoing support of radio, right? And I think, you know, up by us in the FM area have WDHA out of Cedar Knolls, which is close by us. And I'm still a big supporter of these guys. And of course you have Seton Hall Radio, WSOU. I mean, these are institutions to me. Alan, what are your thoughts on these radio stations?
Well, for sure. I mean, DHA was a big local Jersey station, but SOU, I mean, during my years in Hades, especially nonfiction, we were interviewed by every single college station you can imagine, thank God. And it was beautiful, but it didn't generally reach outside of the campus. But SOU reached everywhere. And that's why they got entangled in all that BS years later with payola from the record labels and changing their format. And I think a couple of guys went to jail or something from that, like that were working at SOU because they were taking money for playing music. but they did have that much powerful reach, and that's why that happened. No label was going to throw money at a college station to get anything done unless they really made a big difference and an impact. And I can tell you that the next book, when we get into like the nonfiction years for me, we talk about SOU in the first book and how great they were, because we have photos of Sabotage down there and whatnot, which are phenomenal. And SOU was definitely hooking back then in a big way. But they dramatically changed the landscape for us in terms of nonfiction. Like, we would draw a few hundred people maybe to our shows. All of a sudden, we're drawing a couple thousand because they played us all the time and made us big. And they were impactful. They had a massive effect.
Excuse me. I just want to comment on that. Back in the day, I got my start in college radio, if you will, in high school. I had the luxury of being on a 5,000-watt station up here in Rochester. And remember the days subscribing to CMJ, the College Music Journal, and
the Hard Report, the Hard Report,
the Concrete.
Yeah. And we took that platform, believe it or not, guys. There I was, a senior in high school, and we had the first Metal Mayhem back in 86, 85, 86. And we interviewed Metallica on the Master of Puppets tour. There it was, you know, we were 18-year-old kids. But that's how it was back then. The grassroots, what you were talking about, Alan, of getting you've done hundreds, if not thousands, of interviews, but there was no internet at the time. That right. was the pipeline. And it's sort of come full circle that's when metal blew up. And then all the major radio stations got on the bandwagon. But here we are 35, 40 years later, and it's not at the forefront. And outlets like Metal Mayhem ROC, like what we're doing here, we're the new college stations from back then. It's just
pretty much, yeah.
And we're the ones, you know, we have a global presence. So
and thank you for doing that, brother. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
And we're able to take this platform and get the word out there. I'm telling you one thing, the publicists love it, the record labels love it, and they show us the appreciation. And It's just a testament to the metal community. And it's just ironic that here we are 40 years into this metal, if not longer, metal crusade. And it's like history's repeating itself. So that's
a testament to the new, it's a testament to the new media too, for sure.
Yeah. Alan, when was the first time you had a chance to see Metallica? See any of those Ride the Lightning tour or anything?
I saw Metallica on the Ride the Lightning tour at Lemoore, with Wasp and Armored Saint opening up.
Yeah. I was there too.
That was a great gig. Great gig. I became friends with John Bush as a result of that gig. And he tried to help Hades get signed, believe it or not. He was just such a gracious, cool dude.
He was.
And remains to be, for sure. Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks ago, we saw him up in Cleveland. And we had a chance to have a sit down with Joey Vera. And I tell this story and I'll share it with you guys. I had tickets to the Buffalo, New York Metallica Wasp Armored Saint show, but there was a huge blizzard and the show went on, but old man Vertimatic didn't let me and my buddies go because we were like in 10th grade. And so we missed the show and talked to John Bush on several occasions. I mentioned it to him and he had full recollection of it. Joey Vera, the same thing. So, you know,
first of all, you guys never get real snow up in Buffalo. Please stop crying about that.
I'm not in Buffalo. I'm in Rochester.
No, I'm only kidding. No, when we went to see Lemoore, the Metallica show, I remember pulling up and walking up to the venue and there had to be, I don't know, 200 people or more outside in line, all singing a cappella Metallica songs at the top of their freaking lungs. And it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before.
And I was up in the front of the line.
It was so great. It was so great.
What about that famous Roseland gig that Metallica did back then?
That one I didn't go to.
I wasn't there.
I had another friend of mine, my friend Kevin, photographed that show. That show, that was the show that the band got signed.
Yeah, yeah. Man, the history. And it's not just Jersey. I'm envious of you guys. I talked to Walt about this stuff and, you know, we text, you know, all the time. And he's like, you know, every night he's somewhere. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I was bored, so I'm, you know, over here.
He's checking. Metal Walt. He's Metal Walt.
Yeah. Listen, it's living in this area of the country. I mean, Alan, I think you and I are close by each other. I'm in East Hanover, but, you know, 5-6 shows a month is not unreasonable. The kids go to bed. My wife doesn't care. I just leave. It's fine. It's harmless, you know?
You got to have your time to have some fun.
Exactly. I don't golf. I don't gamble. I don't really drink. So what else are we supposed to do, you know?
And it's awesome. Go. So.
Hey, hey, Alan, I want to give you a chance to shamelessly plug yourself. And you started touching base on this a little bit, but, you know, you were a legendary singer for Stalwarts, Hades and Nonfiction and some other bands, you know, throughout the 80s and 90s and even into 2000. So tell us about that period of time. And also, like, what are you up to now as a musician?
Honestly, the book stuff has been totally commandeering all my time, as my band members can attest to. I have a band called Level Fields with two guys in Germany, and my bass player, Clint, who was in a band called Autumn Hour with me back in 2009, who lives right here in Chatham, close to all of us, because I'm in Denville, so I'm very close to you in East Hanover. So kind of on hold, my guitar player did send me a riff, like an assemblage of a few riffs 2 days ago, and he goes, I know you're really busy. He's like, what do you think of these riffs? But we literally have about a dozen songs ready to almost go, but I gotta kind of put the brakes on it. And honestly, nobody has CD players anymore, so we're gonna probably just release one song at a time digitally. And I'm gonna work on, I'm sure you do, we're gonna work on one song at a time and just and knock them out and release them digitally, one-offs, you know what I mean? But the book is kind of taking priority for me to get it, you know, done, especially now I gotta reverse one. But definitely still staying, you know, solid playing. I have a lot of friends that play in cover bands around here, and I'll just sit in with them every now and then just to stay fresh and keep singing in front of a mic. But, you know, that's kind of the extent of it right now.
The last segment before we let you guys go, I want to have a little fun with you, and this will be like a little rapid fire section. You know, Frank, you probably photographed at every venue imaginable over the last 30, 40 years, but I'm going to just throw some names out there of venues. Tell us quick impressions, likes, dislikes, dumps. So, and for both of you guys, so let's have some fun. Here we go. Studio One.
I loved going to the club. It was in a sketchy neighborhood, but I enjoyed all the shows. Had a great time photographing the bands that I saw there.
Yep. Absolutely hated lugging the gear up all those stairs. It sucked shit. It was so fucking difficult. And we always worked and hustled, so it was a well worth gig after we played it, because, you know, getting the gear back into the truck was like the best part of the night. But we had many, many good shows there for sure.
Yep. It was a legendary clubber for a short period of time. Next one, the Cricket Club in Irvington.
Another sketchy area. You know, I didn't go to too many shows there. Things that, you know, were really kind of like more like one day festival shows. Some of the people, I remember one time, you know, hanging out with Guar outside, you know, in their van, you know, drinking up some beers and stuff back in the day and, you know, having a good time. And, you know, there was other bands there. We, you know, just chit chat, you know, be the before or after they went on. But I got some good images from that place as well. And yeah. I, like pretty much all the other places in the area, you know, I had a chance to photograph at many venues in my many years of photographing shows.
So Cricket Club, I remember doing an SOU show there. Life of Agony used to open up for us all the time with Nonfiction, but they ascended far beyond our reach, and we were opening for them at this SOU show. And I remember Keith Caputo, who I know is Mina now, but at the time was Keith, getting up there and singing, and he was like in a full suit. I'm like, that's the coolest thing. He's in like a three-piece suit. And I think he had just like come from a wedding or something. And he jumped up on the stage just because he came from the wedding and he was in his suit. But I thought it was so badass.
One of the other memorable moments was when I photographed Seven Witches with Jack Frost. And the guys were all dressed up with witches' hats.
Nice.
I thought that was pretty funny.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, here's a great one that was a legendary place, the Burchill Nightclub in Old Bridge.
Well, I could tell you, we used to open for Edgar Casey there when I was in nonfiction. Edgar Casey was a cover band, but there would be 2,000 people there. We'd be able to go swimming in the pool outside before the club opened. We'd go back inside. Art Stock treated us really well. And those were some really monumental shows because we reached a lot of people from Middle and South Jersey that we normally wouldn't be playing for because they were there really to see Edgar Casey. And we kind of won over a lot of fans that way. That was during the SOU years too. So it just like grew exponentially from that. It was a great club, great club.
That was an amazing place because you used to drive down Route 9. You would stop at Bourbon Street Go-Go Bar. It's a pregame. Then you go to the Birch Hill, pull in the dirt road, and on the way back, do the U-turn and either hit the Peter Pan Diner or the White Castle and get home around 4 in the morning.
That's right.
I stopped at that White Castle.
I have a question. You said Art Stock?
Yeah.
Because we used to have clubs up here, Art Stock's Playpen North.
That's right.
Art Stock, way north.
He was the kingpin of clubs back in the day, and probably mostly the 70s and definitely the 80s. He owned like the most liquor licenses, I think, in the state at one point.
And he also had a place in Florida, too.
Yeah.
In the Fort Lauderdale.
He was all over the place, Art Stock.
Ah, geez. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think he was associated with Club Binet as well, which is also down in that central Jersey area.
I don't know that he was, but possibly. I mean, he had his fingers in everything, Art.
Yep. And Frank, of course, near and dear to your heart was a place that I love that I don't think it'd ever be replaced was the Brendan Byrne Arena, because he had the big walkway across to the stadium. You parked at Giant Stadium. You drank your beers. You raised hell, banged on the thing going across the stadium. Yeah, beer bottles all over the place. And you know what? You parked in the parking lot. Now it's just, you know, you got the mall over there and the big parking garages, and it's not the same going down to the Prudential Center in Newark. That was just a place that we all cut our teeth in.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. I wish the arena, you know, opened back up. I mean, it's still there.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, they decided to move all the concerts down to Newark. I mean, I really loved going to the arena because it was so close to my home, and you know, I felt like, wow, this is, I didn't have to pay toll or anything. You know, it was right down the street. Yeah. And I always, you know, had a really good time hanging out in the park lot, you know, tailgating, and got some nice photographs outside too, you know, at some of those events. And I missed that place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope one day that they do something, you know, maybe open it back up, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just,
It's like I was down there for the Jet Miami game with my wife and kids a couple months ago, and we parked right outside of there. And I was pointing to my boys and said, "You see this place? How many games and concerts I saw there? It's like a ghostly building there, just rotting away."
So I've been to the mall next door, and they have a ski slope in that place. Yeah. You know, it's like, wow, it's bizarre. Yeah.
That'll always be the metal, the metal lands to us guys, the metal lands.
That's right.
Yeah. So we had to make sure we honored that place by having that, you know, venue. And
did they really call it the Meadowlands?
Yeah, the Meadowlands. It's the Meadowlands.
I mean, it's cool, but it sounds too easy.
So, hey, guys, we really appreciate your time tonight. I don't know if you have any last parting remarks, but at least tell us and the listeners, where can you go to get the book? Christmas is coming up. Perfect time to buy the book.
JerseyMetalBook.com. JerseyMetalBook.com. And thank you guys for the interview. It's freaking awesome.
Yes, great. It was. I appreciate it.
Just to remind everyone, the book, A History of the Garden State Metal Scene, Volume 1. Like the guys just said, find it everywhere. Buy yourself one. Buy your friends one. And interact with these guys. Are you guys on Twitter, Facebook, any of that?
We're on Facebook.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Jersey Metal.
Jersey Metal. We'll have all this in the show notes too. So,
awesome. Thank you guys.
I'll let Walt say goodbye. I look forward to getting the book. Best of luck and stay in touch.
Thanks, brother. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey guys, it was awesome. Let's keep in touch, right? We're neighbors. I'm sure we'll see you at shows.
Yes, I hope so.
You guys want to go out and get a beer one night? Just give me a ring, Alan. You got my number.
Awesome, brother. Cool. Thank you so much, Metal Walt.
All right, guys. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Metal for life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.